Good evening. Most of you, I already said good evening, but for those who have arrived later, I repeat. It's feeling more like spring. Here, although it has been cold, now it's warming up, and so I have spring more present, I guess, and the flowers more present, and I have, which reminded me of another one of the pages from my notebook that, you know, I've been making these pages in my notebook. And this one is it's taken from the Genjo Koan, which is from Dogen. And so this one says, flowers fall amid our longing. And then on this side, this way, it says, and weeds spring up amid our antipathy. And actually, before the flowers fall, the phrase from Dogen is, yet, though it is like this, simply, flowers fall amid our longing. And so I have this person falling. It's actually an Eskimo. And then lots of petals falling. And then other things written. Everything that arises passes away, which is the same thing as flowers fall amid our longing. And weeds spring up amid our antipathy. And also, everything is as it is, not arising, not falling away. So, may the mind flower bloom in eternal spring. So that's spring, right? This may the mind flower bloom in eternal spring comes from a chant that we chant regularly, although we haven't any of us been in any chanting situations for more than a year, more or less. I was wondering the other day if I were forgotten the chants, which I know so well, you know, or have I forgotten how to do Orioke because I haven't done it for more than a year? Probably not, but it's an interesting thought. Flowers fall. Even though I would like to hang on to knowing how to do Orioke, or even though I don't want to forget how to do Orioke, weeds spring up amid our antipathy. Everything that arises passes away. So, what does that mean for us every day in our lives? Every minute, arising, falling, I have a thought, and then another thought, and the first thought is gone, and the next thought arrives. Feelings, I drink the water and then the glass is empty. I eat breakfast and then I'm hungry at lunchtime. All of it is this passing away, arising and passing away. Life, the kittens are born and then they die. We are born and then we die. And yet, as I wrote, everything is as it is, not arising, not falling away. Sometimes we say unborn, undying. There's a koan where Master Tozan, who was one of the founders of what we call the Soto school in Japanese Zen, which is our lineage has the two schools, Soto and Rinzai. So Tozan is in our lineage. He came along, and one of his disciples was sitting there with his eyes closed. And Tozan said to him, "What are you doing?" And the student said, "I'm entering meditation." And Tozan said, "Meditation has no gate. How can you enter it?" So this is the no arising, no falling away. Everything is meditation, or there is no meditation. There's no gate. There's no gate to this moment. It's just this moment. It's just what it is. Or as the other story that I like, which is similar to this, of Mingyur Rinpoche, when he was a boy, he tells this story of his father was a great Tibetan teacher, and he used to go visit his father and have lunch with him. And one day they were sitting waiting for the lunch to arrive. And he wanted to show his father how good he was at meditation. He was 12 years old, and he was already training to be a teacher as well, to be a great lama as well. And he wanted to show his father how good he was at meditation and how he could experience the great perfection of this timeless moment or something. And so he really, you know, sat there in great posture, trying to show his father how good he was, while his father just sat looking out the window, and they were waiting for breakfast, for lunch to come. And then his father asked him what he was doing, and he said, you know, meditating or something. And his father said, "It's all fake. Everything that we say about it, it's fake. There is no meditation. There is no great teachings. There is no, it's all fake. Throw it away." And at the time, as a 12-year-old boy, he was, of course, very surprised that his father would say this, because his father's life was devoted to this teaching, to the meditation practice, to the Dharma, Buddhism. And yet he was telling him it was all fake. And it wasn't until much, 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 much later, he said, years and years, probably, you know, probably when he was 30 years old or something, that he got what his father was telling him. That, and I guess, you know, we could say it in a sense of like, I think it was last week we were talking about going towards it or not. If you're like trying to be a good meditator, you're going away from what meditation is. If you're trying to be this perfect Zen student, you're going away from what it is to be a perfect Zen student. His father was telling him, there is no perfect student. There is no great perfection. it's just this as it is. And when you get that, then you can see. And then you know what it is to meditate. And then you know what it is to practice. And you know what this Dharma is all about. Right? But as we were saying last week, if you don't try it, if you don't learn the techniques, apply the techniques, you can't let go of something that you never had, right? So you have to try it. You have to go there without thinking that that is what it's about, that you're supposed to be a good meditator. Someone said to me, someone wrote to me this week and said, I haven't memorized my koan, so maybe we shouldn't have our dokusan as planned. What do you think? And I wrote back and I said, well, I meet you wherever you are. I come to the dokusans having no idea about dokusan, about who you are, who I am, what will be presented, what's the subject, there is no subject, what we will talk about. So if you have memorized your koan, I meet you there. If you haven't memorized your koan, I meet you there. And then I said, so what do you say? And he wrote back fairly soon and he said, okay, let's keep it as scheduled. And you know, you've all heard me say this. The point is not preparing to come to the interview with some specific thing in mind and knowing what you're going to say. It's just to show up, just to be there, to really be there. Not some idea of being there, but just to come. And then speak from your heart and be with what's there. And I do the same, or that's my intention. In any case, that's my intention. Because, you know, it's like if you were going to, I read something that this author, fiction writer, who I really like, George Saunders, said when he was learning to write dialogue, he hid a tape recorder under the kitchen table and taped his mother and his grandmother talking. And then he transcribed it. And he said it made absolutely no sense. It was like fragments. I mean, when you were sitting there at the table, it made perfect sense. In the conversation, it made sense. But when you transcribed it, it made no sense whatsoever. Fragments, you know, referring to something that was in the room but that you couldn't see, and all of the nonverbal communication that happens was not visible in the dialogue when he transcribed it. And he said it was the same thing as when he was writing a story. If he came to it with a plan, so he had to learn to write, I'll come back to the dialogue. He had to learn to write dialogue by as if he was in the conversation. He had to put himself in the conversation when he was writing it, so that he could be like, the words could travel through him onto the page. And he said he had to not know where it was going, the dialogue or the story. He said, if you have a plan and before you start the story and you know exactly where it's going, it's like if you were going to dinner with a good friend and you planned out what the conversation was going to be before you arrived. you said, okay, this is, I will say this and he will say that, and we'll talk about this. You might have a subject that you want to talk about with your friend, but you don't know where the conversation is going. And it's so rich, dinner conversation with your friend, because it's fresh and evolving, and you respond to the friend and the friend responds to you, and you don't know where it's going to go. And this applies to every moment. So can we come to the moment like that without planning ahead of time, without expecting something? And that means also not hanging on. So that means the flowers fall, even though we want to keep the flowers. And the weeds will grow up, even though we don't want those weeds. And yet, when we experience that, we can experience the beauty of both. We can really love those flowers because we know they will fall. You know, like I think I said this already, those flowers back there on my altar, you know, they're falling. They're, tomorrow they will be, have been a week there in the vase. And they're, you know, they're nearing their fall. As soon as they were planted, they were already falling. As soon as they started to grow, they were already falling. And as they're falling now, they're already, or they are as beautiful as they were when they were planted. It's just something different. What do we do with all this? You know, because this is about our life, right? This is about living fully, living whole, including everything. Or include, that sounds a little dogmatic, but including rather than excluding. You know, it sounds like an order to include everything, but include instead of exclude. Include the flowers blooming and the flowers falling. Include the whole world. And what is the whole world? The whole world is just right here, what's in front of you. Actually. So the days are growing longer. And we know that that means that they are also growing shorter. Because we know that they will grow longer until June 21st, and then they will start growing shorter again. And yet we can appreciate the daylight staying longer. In France, in Paris, because it's farther north than you in Portugal, in June, it's, we have daylight until almost 11 o'clock. You know, it's great, summer nights in Paris. Fabulous. Not so much this year, you know, last year and this year because of the pandemic, but that too, you know, the pandemic. I know it's hard to appreciate it, but can we appreciate, not like it, but fully live it, live the situation we're in, because it won't last. We don't know where it will go. We don't know how it will evolve, but it won't last. This too will pass. Everything that arises falls away. So can we fully appreciate this? It sounds funny, but you know, I sometimes have, I wouldn't say good memories, but I really, really appreciate the experience I had last year at this time being really, really sick. And it's not that I want to return to that, but it was lived so fully, and I was so, there was so little interference with my experience that that it really was just what it was. And that I long for that. You know, amid my longing, that experience is no longer. And I'm glad it's not, in the sense that I wouldn't want to be sick. At the same time, that depth of experience and that direct experience is very powerful. And that has informed then the way that I am in the world now. I remember that. And I tell myself and I remind myself to appreciate this moment like I appreciated that moment. I don't mean appreciate in like cling to it and want and love it, you know, but appreciate it for what it is. It's not something else. It's just this. Can we, you know, like we say, we chant, sentient beings are numberless, I vow to see them. So that, what that means is, see every one of them. And can we say that about, you know, moments in our life are numberless, I vow to see them. Can I really see, can I really be with each moment? Can I really appreciate this moment? Which means not to disregard it. Not to disregard a single moment. Include it. Disregard is like excluding. So don't exclude. Can I make that my practice? Not excluding a single moment. And when I can do that, the mind flower blooms in eternal spring, as we chant. It's always being renewed. Even when the flowers fall, when the petals are falling, or when the weeds spring up. Not disregarding the weeds. Appreciate the weeds. Whether they're the weeds inside myself that I don't want to see and that I want to get rid of, or the weeds in the streets, the people I don't like, the things I don't want to see. The weeds in the garden. Once when I was visiting my mother, I think 2 or 3 years ago, we were helping her clean out her garage and things like that. And my mother is 92, so, but she lives alone, and but there's some stuff she can't really do, like clean out her garage. So we were helping her do that, and I found this horrible product, which is called Roundup, which is made by Monsanto. You know, it's this horrible, I forget what it's called in French. It's this horrible thing that gives you cancer, you know, and there have been like, it's really a toxic product. And I found this bottle of it in my mother's garage, and I was really mad at her, and I said, why do you have this? And, you know, what is, she didn't know what I was talking about. I mean, she did, but she said, I went to the garden store and they sold me that to get rid of the weeds. So I was mad at the garden store for selling it, you know, and so the reason I'm telling this story is she lives in like this gated community, which are these things, they have these things in the United States. So it's like a neighborhood that's behind gates so that you keep out people you don't want. She's an old lady, so, you know, she feels safe there. And in this gated community, the rules are very strict, and you have to keep your lawn tended to very strict requirements. And you have to have your house, you know, just a certain way. It has to be maintained a certain way. You can't have anything personal about it. So she had to get rid of the weeds. That was part of the deal of living there. And they come around and put something in your mailbox and say, your weeds are getting too strong. You have to have your lawn mowed. You know, you have to, it's really crazy. But so she went to the garden store and bought this stuff to get rid of the weeds. This is, you know, we do this kind of stuff with ourselves. We want to get rid of the weeds. And sometimes we do these really toxic things to get rid of the weeds. You know, the equivalent of this product that somebody tells us we can use to get rid of the weeds within ourselves. Ignoring completely the life of the weeds and the life of ourself, because we're killing a part of ourself when we do that. My mother, I wonder sometimes if she didn't have the cancer that she had because of this stuff she was using. But she doesn't want to hear that. But can we look at our lives and see, when do we do that? Because people are telling us that we're supposed to be a certain way. You know, that we're supposed to look a certain way. We're supposed to act a certain way. We're supposed to feel a certain way. So people tell us this, but we also tell us that about ourselves or about others. And so we'll, you know, get out that bottle of Roundup and pour it on the other people and get rid of them. But if we listen to our four vows, sentient beings are numberless, I bow to see them. And when I see them, that means when I really regard them instead of disregard them, I will not treat them in the same way when I really see them. You know, that's how we can benefit ourselves in the world, is by not disregarding a single being or a certain thing. Whether it's the flowers falling or the weeds coming up. And we have, you know, my mother also has a fly swatter, you know, a fly thing that you hit flies with to kill them. And I, you know, I said to her, why do you want to kill those flies? Of course, she just doesn't, my mother's not a bad person. I don't want to make her sound like she's bad, but it's just, you know, kind of reflexive things that we do, right? You know, we don't want the flies, so pew. So what does that mean for us? Being here now with what is, meeting the moment just as it is, let's say, something like that. So, now it's your turn. If you have questions or comments or stories to share. Joa?
What you said about this author that transcribes a conversation, it makes me think that today I was speaking with a very good friend of mine on the phone, and her son has a lot of difficulties, and so I was inquiring about him, and I was inquiring about her and all that. And hearing what you said made me realize that when we do have a conversation on the phone, it's very factual. We talk about facts, and we make it coherent because there is nothing around it. But you're expressing something, like on the other hand, in life situation, if the person is just hearing, there are all these other aspects that we do with a person which are beyond words, as you said, and I just made me think how I actually miss it, because these days with the pandemic and not seeing, and we end up just exchanging about facts, exchanging about things, exchanging about thoughts, exchanging, but there's all these other elements that constitute an exchange that is absent because it happens on the phone. And it has happened on the phone a lot over these, or on Zoom or whatever. So I actually by also sitting in silence together, this is one of the things we share, something that is nonverbal, and it's actually rather rare, because during this pandemic we just speak and exchange information. But then all this other live content is missing or lost. And I miss it. I personally miss it.
Yeah, there are people who say that that's why we become really tired when we're on Zoom. You know, we can only do it a certain amount of time, because when we are with someone, and really with someone physically, there is a lot of nonverbal stuff going on. And our attention, we don't have to be constantly looking at the person. Our attention wanders, and we look at other things, and we drift, and we look back, and it's completely different attention. Whereas on this, it's kind of an artificial thing where if you're talking to someone and you move your eyes away on Zoom, it's a very different experience. The person's not looking at you anymore when you're talking. And then especially this one is strange, because it's like, who am I talking to? And the people aren't on my screen in the same place as they are on yours. So it's true. It's different. Can we appreciate this anyway? You know, that's the thing. Appreciate that we miss the other, and at the same time, appreciate this and adapt to the circumstances, which we've done wonderfully, actually. Christine?
Yeah. Hi, everybody. When you speak about your illness, when you had COVID, I think it's so intense because there's so little movement and action, you know, it's a little bit like what happens in a retreat when you sit and sit and sit for hours, that each tiny thing becomes more visible. You see the sunlight move throughout the day, and you really realize the fly that is flying by. And I once read a book, I might have mentioned it already, it's called The Noise of a Snail While Eating, or something like that. And it's a woman who got a virus that really knocked her down. She could only lie for months and months. And with time, visits became more rare, because she could not move, and maybe not even speak to her friends who were visiting her. But one friend, once she came and brought her a little flower, a wild violet or something, and there was a snail under the leaf. And she said, well, I thought it you might like it. And then while she's lying in bed, she observes the snail, who in the evening comes out of the violet, of this little pot, and goes around. And after weeks and weeks, she realizes that actually she can hear the snail when it eats the, they have these little tiny things on the tongue, and this makes a noise when she eats some leaves. And then with she really builds a relationship with this snail. And that's a really fascinating book. My friends who have a bookstore in Munich, she said that was her absolute favorite in the year that it came out. Everybody who came in the bookstore got this book, walked out with this book, because she found it so, so wonderful. And yeah, it reminded me just of that, because this woman also, for her, it was even longer than 2 weeks, you know. She really had to stay just in bed for months, and she got quite an expert in snails.
Debbie?
Yeah, it's funny because I wanted to tell you all this anyway, but it's kind of on the subject all of a sudden. I wanted to tell you all this because it's you all, and also because there are lots of cat people among us. I had a very extraordinary experience with my cat the other day, who we're pretty close, especially in the last year, because we haven't seen much of anything else except each other. On my street, there is a rooster that crows. There used to be two, but the other one crowed himself to death. I think he just crowed all the time, and then we didn't hear him anymore. But the primary rooster still is there, and he crows sort of in the morning when he's supposed to and everything. And my cat likes to drink out of the faucet. I don't know if all cats do this, but my cat makes a point of showing off when I have company that she drinks out of the faucet. So she's drinking out of the faucet. And the rooster crowed. And it's down the street. I finally figured out where it is, but you can hear it. And she looked at me and I looked at her and I said, you heard that too, didn't you? Now, she did not say yes, but it was very clear that we had both had the same auditory experience at the same time, which quite frankly doesn't happen that often with her. It has never happened before. It was so clear that we were both, you know how you always feel the cats are kind of in some other world and they're just passing through? Well, in this particular instance, we were in the same world. It was very exciting. And that's what I wanted to share with you all. And maybe that it also has to do with what Joa was saying about being with live things. You know, it's just so wonderful right now.
Yeah, being with live things. I mean, we are being with live things this way too, but it's different. It's true. Yeah, it's different.
Well, and I've never liked in this sort of new age energy, but we're sharing energy. But there is energy with a live being that there isn't on the screen. I mean, there's body heat, there's odor. There, you know, and all the things that we're not getting. I mean, it really,
yeah,
whatever it is.
Absolutely. And I guess in our current moment, we have to appreciate that in the sense of we have to realize that, yes, we miss that. Like Joa says, like Debbie says, we miss it. And at the same time, I know from personal experience in, you know, multiple situations, that if we hang on to that, I miss that, we suffer more than if we just recognize it, fully recognize it. When I say just recognize it, I mean fully acknowledge that we miss it. And yet, this is what it is now. So if we don't, if we hang on to that, I miss it, we can't appreciate what is now, what is here. So yes, the flowers fall and I miss them, you know. I don't want them to die. Yet they do. And I can appreciate them even more being here when I can appreciate that they're dying. So it's really important to acknowledge that, that we miss it. And to acknowledge that in other people. You know, people say, oh, this is so difficult. I'm alone. I can't go to work. I have kids at home. I can't go to the museums. I can't go to the theater. I can't go to the cinema. I can't go to a cafe. I can't go to a restaurant. I mean, this is France. I know in Portugal, you have a different reality at the moment, but in France, we still have nothing. You know, everything's closed. And there can be a tendency to say, well, just get over it. You know, this is how it is, just do it. But that's not appropriate, you know. We have to hear that we do have this longing for contact, to be with people, to go to the cafe, to go to the museum, to be done with this. And we can think, oh, with our Zen practice, we're supposed to say, this is fine, let's just do this. Let's appreciate this, and this is good like this. It's not what I'm saying. It's important to acknowledge the whole thing. The whole catastrophe, as one of the Zen masters in our lineage used to say. The whole catastrophe.
Who was saying that?
Dido Lori. In the sense of, you know, the whole catastrophe, it's like all falling apart and we're falling apart and we get old and we're sick and, you know, we die and things we love, people we love go away and we have breakups and we lose jobs and, you know, babies are born and grow up and, you know, the food we wanted at the restaurant they don't have anymore, or, you know, the person ahead of you in the Orioki gets a bigger portion than you, or, you know, the whole catastrophe. Can we love it all? Not love, it's not masochistic in the sense of I want to suffer, but can we see that by rejecting it is how we suffer? By embracing it is how we end the suffering. And part of that embracing is to acknowledge, you know, like Debbie says, I miss it. And that's, and Joa said, I miss it. Embrace that, I miss it. Joa?
I found really, really important when you say fully embrace, we're talking about missing, but that detail about fully embracing, fully acknowledging, fully recognizing, This morning, after our sitting, I said to the group, how much I missed them. I felt like I was going to miss everyone during the day, which was just an ordinary day. And then I think someone asked, what do you mean, or something. Anyway, I know that afterwards I felt really frustrated, and I couldn't exactly, I spent a lot of time with that because I felt frustrated about something, and I couldn't say why. And I think now, after hearing everything that was said, it feels that bit of fully. I was not fully experiencing and embracing how much I missed the people who were present this morning. There was something. As if I was holding myself from fully experiencing that, you know. And then maybe because there was a question or a commentary or something, like I held back or something, you know, like, I don't know, maybe being afraid of, I don't know, fully experiencing and fully recognizing, first of all, to myself, I don't know how much I missed people. Yeah, thank you.
Well, and when we can fully embrace missing, missing people or missing something, because when we say we miss it, there's this notion of something is absent. It's missing. You know, we say in a puzzle, you know, there's a piece missing. And I don't know if that works in French, it works too. I don't know if it works in Portuguese when you say, if you say you're missing something or missing someone, does it have the same connotation as when a piece is missing from, or a spice is missing from the cooking, or a part is missing from the car? Yeah, it has the same kind of connotation. Yeah. So there's this absence that's implied. And if we fully embrace it, then there's no more absence. There is still the missing person that we would like to see or be with, or the activity that would like to enjoy. But if we fully embrace it, there's no longer anything missing. This doesn't make sense intellectually, but experientially, you can recognize it if you try it, if you do it. And you may already have had experiences like this. Probably have, I would assume, because I think we all do without even noticing it. In fact, it's how we can go on living. you know, after someone dies, for example, someone close to us dies. There's this deep grief, sadness, mourning. And yet at some point, we can appreciate a nice meal. We can have a nice walk in the forest, something. And we can, the only way that we can do that is if we include the loss that we've experienced. Because if we focus only on the loss, we won't be able to experience the nice meal, the walk in the forest. We have to include the loss, include the what's missing. And this, you know, this moment we're living is a good moment for it, because there's so much that we feel that's been lost. Lives, lots of people have lost their lives. We've lost so much of what our lives usually looked like. And yet, as we've said over and over and over again, this, what we've been experiencing here daily in the Sangha, has arisen from that loss. And it's priceless. If we were still hanging on to what we've lost, we wouldn't be able to appreciate this, what's happened for our Sangha, which has been so powerful and so deep for our Sangha, you know, for our practice of all of us. And I'm talking, my practice too, you know, I'm not just talking about you, I'm talking about me too. It's been so rich and so deep. And we've had to include what we've lost, though, in order to appreciate that. Debbie?
I really hear what you're saying, and accept the word Sangha is almost a little bit too foreign. Really, in many ways, I feel like you all are my family. I mean, I've seen more of you guys. I know it's on the screen and everything, but than I have of people I've been married to, quite frankly. You know what I mean? Now, maybe we'll all get together and we won't like each other. But in the meantime, it's really, really wonderful.
Yeah, and that's wonderful. It is. It's a great word, wonderful. Beautiful. Yeah. Yep. Well, I'm hoping that we will be together. You know, we were supposed to be together in a few weeks. I doubt we will be in France. We were supposed to be together in Portugal in June. We won't be. But August. In the meantime, here we are. No, here we are all together. And that's fabulous. So we're about out of time. Someone made a suggestion to me. I think it was Debbie, actually. Was it? No, someone made a suggestion to me about, no, maybe it wasn't Debbie. Some of you have had, when we were in Coimbra more than a year ago, in the fall of 2019, in Portugal, you ordered a book that João had translated of my poetry, and that Oscar and his art collective had made this beautiful book. And you paid in advance so that you could get it, and then Zhuang mailed it to you. I hope the people who ordered it have received it. Someone who I was talking to, I guess maybe it wasn't, I don't think it was Debbie because she didn't know about this book, but someone said, oh, you know, we were supposed to have had a reading in March of 2020. I was supposed to be in Porto at a reading at Oscar's art gallery, and we were going to launch the book then, as we say. I was going to sign the books. It's going to be a big event. And then that retreat didn't happen. We didn't go. And so finally, Zhuang, you managed to get the books and sent them out anyway to the people who had ordered them. But someone said, oh, well, why don't you do a reading online? Why don't you do a reading on Zoom? And I thought, of course, I've participated in the past year, I've participated in readings online. And I thought, why didn't we think of that? So I will talk with Zhuang and we'll try to figure it out. We'll do it on Zoom. I don't know when or how exactly, but we'll do it. And we'll try to get Oscar involved and see if he, you know, wants to help advertise it, even though he's not involved with the gallery anymore. But so that's something to look forward to in the coming weeks, months. So I guess we'll do the vows. Thank you.